Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Yes, I don't know how else to say it. Look, he's a guy, he was the civil rights leader, he was the African American that all the press went to talk to, and then to some extent Al Sharpton took the limelight away, but he was still there, and now it's gotta hurt. I do think Jesse is jealous. I also think there are tremendous differences between Jesse Jackson and Barack Obama, and the ways they look at America, and the ways they look at African Americans and so forth. Jesse Jackson is a black leader. He is a leader of African Americans. He speaks out on African American issues, and that is his thing. That's what he does, for good and for ill. And Jesse Jackson has done plenty for good and for ill. Everything from really standing up for people who have no voice to being known as sort of a shakedown artist. And not just among whites, but among blacks too, someone who uses his publicity, I was going to say notoriety, and I wasn't sure if that was fair. Let's just say his famousness to shake down corporations and so forth and to pat his own pockets. In any case, Jesse Jackson is, for good and for ill, a black leader, an African American leader. Barack Obama is an American leader who is African-American, or at least half black. And obviously there's a big difference between a black leader and a leader who is black. And I think Jesse Jackson sees that difference. And Obama, let's face it, is very carefully trying to separate himself while making clear that he supports causes of civil rights, he supports African-American causes. At least until he gets elected, he's not going to lead the way on those issues. I remember when Jesse Jackson tried to get Barack Obama to march with him down at Jenna. And I've talked about, many hosts on the Horn have talked about the horrors of the Jenna 6 and the hanging noose from the tree and so forth. And Obama played it careful. He played it careful. He said the right things but didn't go down there. He instead went to Selma. In other words, he went to the places where there's no controversy anymore, the safe places. Today Martin Luther King is considered like Santa Claus. People have even talked about that, where Martin Luther King, let's face it, had his own radical sides. Those have all been pasted away with Martin Luther King Day, with the statues that are going to be on the Mall in Washington, D.C., and so forth. People forget that Martin Luther King was a radical in the sense, not just about civil rights for blacks, but also in terms of being for gay rights very early on, in terms of being against the Vietnam War at a time when people said, hey, you need to just stick to civil rights issues. He was one that pointed out that our foreign policy comes back to bite us in ways that were more eloquent, certainly, than Reverend Jeremiah Wright's, but not that dissimilar in terms of his overall point, which is that when America does evil deeds in the world, it comes back to bite us. It makes America less good. So Obama is definitely tugging to the civil rights tradition that pretty much all Americans, except the unreformed racists, people like Jesse Helms. Goodbye, Jesse. Enjoy hell. Can't say I'll miss you. But apart from the Jesse Helms of the world, the great majority of Americans have accepted that civil rights are necessary, and then we differ on other things, on urban policy, on helping the poor, on affirmative action, on what specifically the government should do to help African Americans today economically. Those are things we still have great differences on, Democrats and Republicans, and even within the parties. But Barack Obama has taken the safe choice, and again, you may call me an apologist for Barack Obama if you want. Hey, call in. Call me names. I can take it. 877-4-HEAD-ON. But I don't blame him. I get it. When you are a minority and you're running for office, it is important to run for office as an American, defending American things, defending your minority to be sure, but not seen as only defending your minority. I know that is true of everyone from Keith Ellison, a Muslim congressman, to Jewish members of Congress, to Asian members of Congress, to gay members of Congress. And Congressman Barney Frank may be most well known as a gay congressman, but I guarantee you on the Hill, that's not what most people think of, really, when they think of Barney Frank. Maybe it's what some think of. But on the Hill, most of them know him as a fearsome legislator, someone who very much defends civil rights, defends the homeless, defends immigrants. Indeed, he was the one who was doing the mortgage package on to help those that have been hurt so much by the subprime crisis. There ain't nothing gay in that. So I understand where Obama's coming from. Had he hewed to the path set by Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, he wouldn't be where he is today. So I get it. I get it. But Jesse Jackson, I'm sure, is jealous. He is the first African-American candidate to really get a substantial number of votes. There were those before him outside the Democratic and Republican parties. Shirley Chisholm comes to mind as, I believe, the first African-American to actually run for president. There were some, I think, on the Communist Party that may have been earlier. In any case, obviously, Jesse Jackson is the first to win a primary of a major party. And, but I don't think anyone ever felt he had a chance. I think there's some anger there. And I think that's obviously the backdrop to the unfortunate comments that Jesse Jackson made about Barack Obama off mic. If he says those things off mic, you can imagine what he says in private. He was recorded, as if you don't know, and I think everyone does know, that let's just say, using an obscene term for castrating Barack Obama. And Jesse Jackson's complaint was very interesting. His complaint was that he was talking down to black people regarding George Bush's faith-based initiative. And one of the things that I've found really very impressive by Barack Obama is how he has dealt with George Bush's faith-based initiative. I mean, here is something that is understood by virtually nobody in the nation. Most people in Washington don't understand it. Certainly most people outside the Beltway don't get it, and I know the media doesn't understand it. This is one of those initiatives that I worked very hard on the inside. I know all the details about it, and a few in Washington do. Most don't. And what impressed me so much about Barack Obama is that he knows what's going on, and yet he's using the ignorance of the nation to his own advantage. Let me explain, because I think this is a classic inside scoop on politics that you really won't find anywhere at all in the mainstream media. And it just shows how many people misunderstand the faith-based initiative. I fully expect Matt Rothschild of Progressive Note to condemn Barack Obama on this, just as Jesse Jackson has done, when actually he's being very clever. Some would say too clever. He's certainly being political. Let me explain. The faith-based initiative was set up by Karl Rove, and really it's his baby. The people they hired were secondary. Karl Rove knew that there are a bunch of fundamentalist Christians, other strong believing Christians, mostly Christians, some Orthodox Jews too, but fundamentalist religious groups, Southern Baptists and so forth. Many of them were not necessarily pro-Bush on things other than the standard Republican, we hate abortions, we hate gay people kind of religious rhetoric. They might not have agreed with Bush on the environment. They might not have agreed with Bush on the war. After all, if you truly are following in the steps of Jesus Christ, it's really hard to argue for a preemptive war against a nation that never attacked us. So in reaching out to evangelicals and understanding that many of them just didn't vote, Karl Rove came up with a very impressive idea. He would package something that's already done that's already been done for 50 years. Pretend like it hasn't been done. Convince the media and the American public in the big Joseph Goebbels lie that this thing doesn't happen. And then come to the savior of the religious people. And then you throw in a little piece of dirt, maybe an important piece of dirt. Let's face it, right? Little pieces of dirt can become pearls and oysters. But throw in just a little wedge, a tiny change to do two things. One, to actually create something new so that he could argue it was something new. And two, to make sure that Democrats wouldn't vote for it. And that way, he could say, liberals hate religion. We love religion. Religious people, vote for us. What is the faith-based initiative? Well, it's portrayed in the media, and it should be fair to say by the Bush administration as well, because they've been feeding this line to the media for 8 years, as government aid to religious organizations that are helping the poor, helping the needy, helping those that need, you know, drug treatment. And, of course, Democrats and liberals believe, have believed, continue to believe, argue with Republicans in their belief that government should aid the poor and those in need of drug treatment and those who are hungry and those in need of shelter. I mean, just listen, you know, half a minute to John Edwards. He ran a whole campaign on the idea that we need to look out for those least among us. Indeed, that was Jesus' argument too, right? The nice Jewish boy from the Galilee? What was his main argument? It's easier for a camel to go through an eye of a needle than a rich man to enter heaven. Who did he not like in the temple? The money changers. Who did he care most about? Those least among us. The meek shall inherit the earth. He hung out with the lepers and the prostitutes. So there's a strong religious message in helping the poor. It's one that religious people, progressive, liberal religious people, have always understood. And George Bush, and really Karl Rove, I mean, it's not like George Bush has too many original thoughts. Karl Rove, at the behest of George Bush, decided to go after those people. And so he talked about the armies of compassion. And George Bush, you know, he loved this stuff. I mean, here's a guy who had a really terrible past, high on cocaine all the time, literally getting into fist fights with his own father. Think about that. I mean, he's trying to deck a former president of the United States. You'd think the Secret Service would be there. A guy who's running around drunk driving, taking his younger brother on drunk driving. A guy that's been arrested not once, not twice, but three separate times. Boy, most people don't even know these stories, do they? Arrested for stealing, arrested for fighting, and arrested for drunk driving. So here's a guy with quite a past. But he knows that if you say religion, if you say redemption, if you say Jesus a few times, well, everyone will forgive you. As George Bush has put it, well, I didn't do anything bad since I was 40. So this was a president who was very willing to take Karl Rove's idea of the armies of compassion. And the story goes like this. These religious organizations want to help the poor, the least among us, and the government stands in their way. The evil, liberal, secular government stands in their way. Not by laws preventing them from helping people, no, but not by giving them enough money to help people. And there were all kinds of anecdotal ideas, Teen Challenge and so forth. The only way to get out of drugs is God. That's the only way to get off drugs. Well, let me say this. I have no doubt that people get off drugs for all kinds of reasons. There are family interventions. Some of those I know are successful. There's someone simply hitting rock bottom, losing everything, friends, family, money, and then deciding to reform their lives. Sometimes jail sentences work. I would argue drug treatment centers work at a greater rate. And I have no doubt that in some cases someone turns to a religious faith and that helps them break the habit, along with turning to friends and turning to family. Fair enough. I actually accept that that may happen sometimes, although I also accept that many times all of these programs fail. But George Bush sold one on the media. No, Karl Rove. Karl Rove sold one on the media. He sold the media that the government does not provide money to religious organizations that want to help the poor. And he knew that he could reach out to liberal religious people, to progressive religious people, to, for example, Catholics, who, believe it or not, are far more liberal than Protestants, Scalia notwithstanding, the five Catholic justices of the Supreme Court who happen to be the five most conservative notwithstanding. Most Catholics are more liberal. Hey, again, ask Barney Frank, whose district has a large, large number of Catholics in it, probably 40%. Catholics tend to be liberal. They tend to disagree with liberals on abortion. But on issues like helping the poor, they're far more concerned than most Protestants are. So Karl Rove decided to reach out to these people by pretending that the government didn't give money to religious organizations to reach out to the poor, to those that that use drugs. But you know what? It was all one big, fat lie. Here's the part that the media doesn't tell you. It's out there. It's before their face. It's a fact. It's easily proven. But, you know, reporters, they're just too lazy to look up the facts, to look up the truth. And the truth is that the government has been aiding religious organizations, giving direct taxpayer funds to religious organizations since the 1960s. The faith-based initiative ain't nothing new, except for the part I'm going to get to, the sand in the hopper, the new idea, the one that liberals would hate, discrimination. We'll get to that. But apart from that little new thing, the part that everyone talks about, the armies of compassion and religious organizations helping people, that has been done since the 1960s. You don't believe me? Ask Catholic Charities. Ask United Methodists. Ask the Jewish Federation. All three of those organizations have gotten hundreds of millions of dollars, probably in the billions now, over the past 40, almost 50 years. And they've done so by making a simple pact with the government. They have said, we will help everyone. And we will hire everyone. In other words, Catholic Charities cares about helping the poor, not just the Catholic poor. You can be Catholic, you can be Protestant, you can be atheist. That's the condition that Catholic Charities accepts when they take government money. And you know what? I've talked with people at Catholic Charities and they don't mind a bit. Jewish Family Service helps families, not just Jewish families. Jewish Family Service in Nashville, Tennessee has one of the best domestic violence programs. They help all kinds of women, certainly not just Jewish women. And they don't hire just Jews. In fact, they can hire anyone. In fact, they're required by law to hire anyone because that's what the government requires as a condition of taking taxpayer money. And you know what? They don't complain. They understand. And they've never wanted it otherwise. The same is true for United Methodists. In other words, it's a system that has worked for 40 or 50 years. Yes, there are religious organizations that care about helping others because they see it as a religious motivation. They see it as part of their religion to help others, to help those less fortunate, and that's a wonderful thing. And they've taken government money for 50 years, and they don't discriminate in jobs or in benefits, and all is well. Until the Salvation Army wanted government dollars, too. But you see, the Salvation Army is different from Catholic Charities and Jewish Federation, United Methodists. The Salvation Army wanted to discriminate. They wanted to make sure that before you got their soup, if you were hungry, you had to say a prayer, a specific prayer, a Salvation Army prayer. You had to agree to the tenets of their religion before you got soup. Otherwise, they would let you starve. And if you were gay, you were kicked out altogether. And don't get me started on transgendered people. And the Salvation Army didn't want to hire anyone. They found that if you were gay, you weren't capable of handing out soup to the hungry. They didn't want to hire gay people. They didn't want to hire atheists. They didn't want to hire Muslims. They didn't want to hire Jews. And you know what? I respect the right of the Salvation Army to be as bigoted as they want to be. This is America. Heck, we have the Ku Klux Klan. If the Salvation Army wants to be bigoted, if they only want to hire certain people, if they want to make sure that the hungry only get fed if they say a certain prayer, you know what? They have a legal right to do it. But not with my money. Not with taxpayer dollars. That's where the rubber hits the road. So Karl Rove did a clever thing. He sold the faith-based initiative, and all of you, I'm sure, have heard armies of compassion, government helping, religions helping the poor. That's the rhetoric you heard. And yet that wasn't a change. The part you didn't hear was all about discrimination, because that was the only changed part. I helped kill that bill. I'm very proud I helped kill that bill. As I said, the Ku Klux Klan has a right to exist, but I don't have to give it government money, and I would never give a dime to the Salvation Army. I should note, there are organizations that help the poor that do not discriminate. A Goodwill, for example, doesn't, and I encourage you to support Goodwill. Or even, you know, Catholic Charities, Jewish Federation, United Methodist. There are many organizations that do help the poor that don't discriminate. And in fact, when I see the Santas and their bells at the Salvation Army, I tell them why I'm not giving them any of my money. But I do make sure to give to organizations that help the poor. So you see, the faith-based initiative was a small pile of manure wrapped with a very pretty box and bow. I helped defeat that initiative. I'm very proud of the work I did. If you want to know details of how I did it, call in sometime. It's interesting. It partly involves Hillary Clinton. 877-4-HEAD-ON. But I defeated it. Bush managed to get around some of it without legislation, using executive orders, but basically it didn't go very far. And what's fascinating about it all is that there were many liberals who supported it, who didn't understand the discrimination issue because it wasn't put in the front, and said, well, why shouldn't we help the poor? And loved the idea of a so-called conservative wanting to give a lot of money to helping the poor. Not realizing that there's lots of ways to give money to help the poor. There's a huge number of government programs. Look at something like Head Start, which helps children from poorer families who often have both parents working or only have a single parent in the home and she or he is working. Help them get an early start in school. Very successful government programs. No, they didn't want to support those. And what John DiIulio of the Faith-Based Initiative has come out and said, as well his replacement David Kuo, both of them, have made it clear Bush didn't give a damn about giving money to help the poor. They didn't want to increase money to help the poor or to help people get off drugs. No, 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 no. This was all a sales pitch. This was all Karl Rove reaching out to religious people, good-willed religious people, conservative and liberal religious people, people who care about religion and care about helping the poor, good people. And it was all a trick because they... DiIulio and Kuo will tell you they didn't care about helping the poor. They just wanted to use it for politics. In fact, it's it was them who argued that the Bush administration was the Mayberry Machiavellis, right? They only cared about political things. So fast forward to Barack Obama going around and churches, and talking about his support for the faith-based initiative. Now, you could argue it's too clever by half. I happen to like it. Sure, I know the truth. Sure, you know the truth, but most people don't. The truth is that the faith-based initiative isn't a change from the past. And Barack Obama says, I support the faith-based initiative with one small difference. I wouldn't discriminate. That's right. Barack Obama took the nicely wrapped package and removed the manure inside, disinfected it, and is now selling what is already current law. as if it were the old Bush package. Very clever. Very smart. I don't mind at all. If the Republicans are going to sell the faith-based initiative as if it really were about helping religious people form the armies of compassion with government money to help needy people, fine. We'll take your rhetoric and we'll make it real. Remove the little discrimination part, and I have no problem with the faith-based initiative. Indeed, I think it's a good thing. And so does Barack Obama. And now we can actually fund the thing. And as long as these religious organizations don't discriminate, and we have to make sure they don't, you know, as long as they actually are helping the poor, I don't care that they have a cross on the wall. I don't care that a nun is giving out the benefits, as long as they're willing to hire an atheist too, or a Muslim, or a Buddhist. As long as they don't discriminate on the basis of religion, as long as they don't discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation, then this is just another government program that helps poor people, and we've all got to be for it. And the thing that amazes me is those who are tricked on the left, who think, well, Bush supported it, therefore it was bad, Obama's supporting it, therefore he's moving away from progressive ideals. No, 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 no. The faith-based initiative without the discrimination part is a progressive ideal. So I think Obama's doing a very clever thing. He is accepting the rhetoric and making it real. And some will say, well, this just shows Obama knows how to act like a politician. I say, good for him. One of the things that concerned me, frankly, when I was trying to decide who to vote for between Obama and Clinton, and remember, this was early on in the process before Hillary Clinton self-destructed, I had a hard choice. Many of y'all know I had a hard choice and heard my deliberations back and forth when I finally decided to support Obama. But one of the things that concerned me was I wondered if Obama was tough enough. I knew that Hillary Clinton could play tough. I knew Bill Clinton could play tough. And I mean roll in the dirt. And one of the things that concerned me about Al Gore, and I loved Al Gore, and frankly, I prefer Al Gore over either Clinton, always have. Way back when Clinton and Gore ran in 92, I wished Gore had been at the top of the ticket. Gore is a very honest man, maybe too honest, the kind of guy who gets in trouble because he's not willing to get down and fight in the dirt. I was worried about Obama. I was worried he was too squeaky clean. One of the things that led me to almost vote for Hillary was the feeling that she was a fighter, that she could play on the up and up, and she could even play below the belt if necessary, like Bill Clinton. Well, this, I think, is Obama acting like a politician in a very good way. The media's been tricked. He knows he can't undo Karl Rove's mishandling of the faith-based initiative. He can't undo the lies. America has been lied to. They're tricked. They think the faith-based initiative means something else. So he plays to it. I forget whether it was a Zen master or I think it was actually an ancient Chinese strategist. I wish I could remember his name. Maybe one of you can help me. The one that said that the best way to fight is to use your enemy's force against him. Your enemy comes at you, and I think, again, I'm not a martial arts specialist, and I don't know whether it's karate or jujitsu or whatever, but the idea is to somehow manipulate the force so that his own force comes back and hurts him. Some would say that's what our enemies do to American power today. But in essence, that's what Obama's doing. He knows he can't rewrite the media lie. He can't convince the media the truth. That's too much effort. No, he's going to go with the flow, take out the horror of it, and then come around and seem like a moderate because he's supporting something that Bush ostensibly supported when he really isn't. And best part about it, he is someone that can then reach out to well-meaning religious people who I think the Democratic Party needs to reach out to. I do not hesitate to go after religious bigots and religious hypocrites, but I've never gone after organized religion per se. I really don't. If that's your belief and you're not harming anyone, good for you. Good for you. I've always felt that way. I do not have this... And maybe because I didn't grow up with the background of some other people who were really mistreated by their fundamentalist backgrounds. In my view, if you're not harming anyone, you can believe in the flying spaghetti monster. You can believe whatever you want. It's all as long as you look out for your fellow man or woman. To me, that's what religion is about. So I'm glad that Obama's doing this. And this brings us back to how I began this discussion, talking about Jesse Jackson. The reason why Jesse Jackson made the crude comment about Barack Obama was he said that Obama was talking down to black people with regard to the faith-based initiative. Jesse Jackson's a smart man. He knows the faith-based initiative is a ruse. He knows that as Barack Obama is talking about it without the discrimination planks, it's no different from current law. He's advocating something that has no difference from current law. Now, the one thing that Obama can advocate is more money toward it, which is good. Certainly we should have more money helping poor people. But I think Jesse Jackson is saying, in effect, you know, Obama's trying to put one over on us. Well, he is. And good for him. Got to know how to use the language of politics. I'm glad. I want a tough guy. I want someone who, in doing the right thing, if he has to do a little hoodwinking the public. And the irony of all of this is that it's a hoodwink that's actually right out there. And it's not like he's lying to us. I mean, here's the thing I guess I'm trying to convey, maybe imperfectly. Obama's not lying. I mean, the faith-based initiative without discrimination is a good thing. It's not like he's, you know, lying about weapons of mass destruction to get us into war. He's not lying. All he's doing is using Bush's lies to convey a greater truth. I say, go Obama. If you want to call in, the toll-free number, 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. If you want to talk about what I've just discussed, or coming up next, I'm going to talk about Gina Gray, an American hero. Do you know about her? We'll talk about her, the former public affairs director at Arlington National Cemetery, and also Iran's missile test, all coming up right after this.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can grab off our website over at progressive.org. In his chortle over the Democratic cave-in on FISA, Bush underscored a little-noticed aspect of the bill that deserves more attention. He said it'll protect the telecom companies from lawsuits dealing not only with their past cooperation with the government, but also with their future cooperation. So I took a look at the bill, and true enough, it says that the Attorney General and the Director of National Intelligence can order a telecom company to immediately provide the government with all information, facilities, or assistance necessary. And it says, no cause of action shall lie in any court against any electronic communication service provider for forking over the info. Thus, we have the Congress granting to the executive branch and to the private sector enormous new powers to violate our privacy. And we as citizens will have no recourse to challenge these orders. Look what's happening here. The government can now conscript the private sector to do its dirty work. But don't pity the companies. The government will pay them for coughing up our secrets, the bill says. The combined power of the executive branch and the private sector is now arrayed against the individual. This is not what our founders had in mind. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. It's the Week in Review. All topics are valid. Just give a call, 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Rama from Vermont, welcome.
Yeah, how you doing, Mark?
Hey, doing good.
I'll just put it this way. I don't buy the argument that if Obama is just better at playing the same old type of political games that we're used to seeing played, that somehow he's going to go down to Washington, D.C. and make any meaningful changes. I mean, the meaningful changes start from the bottom up. They don't start once you get down to D.C. I remember Clinton when he went there. He ran on a very progressive and populist message. And it took about a year for the Washington, D.C. establishment to turn him. And by the time he left office, about the only good thing I can say about Clinton was the fact that he had actually gotten us down to a balanced budget. And that was thanks as much to H.W.'s tax increases as it was to Clinton's tax increases, which the country badly needed at that time. And the argument that Obama is being clever, and by repackaging somebody else's message and presenting it in the same kind of cynical nature that the other people were presenting it, and that somehow this is supposed to say, well, look, he's going to go down there and change things and make it better. I for one, I don't buy it, because I look at what people do, I listen to what they say, and the one thing I do believe is that Obama is an honest person, and he's saying what he believes. And I've read what he said and listened to what he said for the whole time that he's been running. And the truth is, this is a guy that is going to help put more money into organized religion. And while you're right, there was always projects going on where various religious institutions formed secular nonprofits through which they could get government money and do the good deeds. But, you know, this whole faith-based initiative has taken a big change on that over the years. They didn't have an office in the White House. They didn't have direct access to the president's staff. And nowadays they do, and to say that.
But Rama, there's a number of points you raise, and I want to deal with each of them. But let me just deal with your last one first. What is the problem with religious organizations setting up secular nonprofits, hiring everyone under the same civil rights laws that non-religious organizations have? You can't discriminate on the basis of religion. Serving everyone, you know, no matter the faith or race or sexual orientation of the, as long as the non-discrimination laws are strictly upheld, and Obama has said he would do that, and I have no doubt that under his administration those laws would be enforced. What is the problem with these organizations distributing aid? Obviously, if they don't do it well, you stop giving them money. I mean, some of these organizations turn out to be, you know, charlatans. Obviously, you have to evaluate it. But in general, what's the problem? I don't understand the problem with the faith-based initiative as Obama wants to do it.
Well, because you're not listening to him, I don't think. First off, I have no problem with...
Oh, we lost Rama. Rama, I don't know what happened, but I assume you will call back. I assume it was just some kind of accident, and I hope you will call right back in, because I would like to know the answer to that question. Let me deal with some of the other things that he said while we wait for him to call back in. And one is that, you know, using the same old techniques. Look, there's a huge difference between means and ends. I mean, yes, Obama's being clever. Yes, he's playing politician. Yes, he's not being the kind of innocent person that I think Al Gore often was in government. And I love Al Gore. And Al Gore won the election of 2000. And yet it was stolen partly because Al Gore wasn't willing to fight dirty to get it back. You know, Al Gore reminds me of someone who, you know, a prize fighter who's willing to play by the rules. The ref turns around. He's kicked below the belt. And he takes it honorably and tries to keep fighting. I need someone like Barack Obama who knows Chicago politics, because we got Karl Roves out there. I'm willing to play dirty, and I don't agree that Clinton didn't achieve anything other than the surplus. I think that, yeah, Clinton didn't go as far in some ways as I'd like, but he was the differences between the Clinton years and the Bush years are legion. I mean, you can argue legitimately about things that Clinton didn't do. That's fair. But to say that other than the surplus, he wasn't an improvement over the two Bushes, I think that goes a little far. Rama's back. Okay, Rama, before you got cut off, you were explaining what it is that you have a problem with Obama's version of the faith-based initiative. Please explain.
All right. Now, I have no problem, as I said, with a secular nonprofit, and I don't care who forms it. Within reason. I guess there are people who I would be concerned with who formed it, but in general, I don't care who forms it. That it's secular.
You wouldn't want people with violent criminal records, for example.
Well,
but in general.
Yeah, I mean, without trying to get into specifics, and I'm sure.
Right. I understand. Go ahead.
But there's a difference between that and giving religious organizations direct access into the government. And to tell you the truth, I object to even having diplomatic relationships with the Vatican for the same basic reason.
Really? I see that as harmless. I really see that as harmless. Certainly it is very meaningful to Catholics across the globe. I really don't think the Pope is controlling American policy, but to the extent that he influences it, or the Dalai Lama influences it, or any other respected religious leader has a right to make his or her comment. What's wrong with that?
We disagree on that. I think it's wrong because one of the things that got right in our Constitution beyond a shadow of a doubt is the understanding that things like religion bring out dogmatic responses in people, and you cannot sit down and have a reasonable debate about whose religion is right and whose religion is wrong. And that's one of the reasons why it was really meant to be kept out of our government.
Sure, but surely the Pope isn't arguing with George Bush over the Immaculate Conception. I mean, the Pope is arguing it, for example, that the Iraq War was a bad idea. And as a religious, moral leader, I like it. Bush has to hear that argument. He doesn't have to accept it. Clearly he hasn't. But I don't mind having relations with the Vatican. We have relations with Saudi Arabia, and they have a lot more power than the Vatican does, and they're a theocratic state. So I don't have a problem.
I have some problems having the type of relationships we have with Saudi Arabia too.
We're too friendly to them. But the problem is not that they're religious. The problem is that they're dictatorial and mistreat women, and that's the problem. Not that they're Muslim, but that they do these other awful things.
And it's not that the Pope's Catholic that bothers me. It's the fact that he heads a church, which is by its definition is a religious organization that is going to push a religious agenda. No matter what it's doing there, as long as he's operating under the official paradigm of being the Pope. Now, getting back to Obama, you listen to what Obama says when he talks about this, and he says that what's the name? Faith-based and neighborhood organizations, right?
Right.
And once that name is out there, it's just like putting "In God We Trust" on the money to head off. Heathen communism, et cetera, are doing, putting One Nation Under God in the Pledge of Allegiance. Once that little nook is in the door, which is what Karl Rove did, by the way, and he understood this quite well. Once that nook is under the door, you have to make a deliberate attempt to get it out of the door again in order to keep it from creeping further and further in. I have never known, and this is one of the failings of liberalism. I have never known a liberal-based social program to get defunded or to actively have liberals sit there and say, well, look, we need to fund this less so we can put money elsewhere. And I'm not picking on any particular groups.
That's a trouble with government programs in general. I mean, you can argue that Congress gives money to a program, it's very hard to take it from it. And that's true. That's true for farm subsidies, and that's true for bridges, and that's true for military bases and Medicare and everything else too.
It's true for saying that you want to put more money into programs that you're going to call faith-based and neighborhood, and I forget there's another word there that it's totally losing me on, but faith-based is the first half of the names that he's giving these programs.
Right, and I think he called neighborhood or secular organization, something like that. I know what you're talking about.
It's something along that line. And once that camel's nose got in the tent, and that's what Bush and Rove did. They made sure that nose got way. As a matter of fact, they got a couple of cloven hoofs up under that tent, too.
They did, but I guess, Rama, look, if we take out the cloven hoofs of discrimination, which I think are clearly the danger, the primary danger, the rest of it, look, I believe and have argued that "In God We Trust" on money is silly. I also think it's unconstitutional. If I were a judge, I would say it's unconstitutional. I also think, you know, One Nation Under God and the Pledge of Allegiance is silly and unconstitutional. I don't think it causes major harm. I think it's stupid. I mean, I think that religious people don't need to look at their coins. If they need to look at their coins to justify their beliefs, then their beliefs are pretty damn fragile. So I agree with you that it's a wrong idea. But at the end of the day, you know, people using government money to discriminate bothers me much more than In God We Trust on the coins or, you know, I mean, you talk about them having access to government.
First off, I don't think Obama will be able to get rid of this discrimination, but that's a different topic entirely.
Well, that's an enforcement issue.
Going back, though, well, no, because it isn't. Because what will creep in there, and it'll keep going on, is more and more stringent religious control over these programs. Because if you're right, if it was just In God We Trust on the money, it would just be a silly thing. If it was just One Nation Under God and the Pledge of Allegiance that I don't say anyway, it would be silly.
Or even if it's a cross on the wall at a place that serves soup to homeless people, I don't mind the cross on the wall. It doesn't faze me.
That comes with the building that most soup kitchens are in. And that, you know, but you can walk in or out of those. And that's one reason for not giving money to a religious organization, though.
But if they make them say a prayer, that's where I draw the line. That's where Salvation Army
is. It is not just a couple of words on our coin. It is not just a couple of words in this pledge of allegiance to a flag that we have. It's a much greater active push by religion over the years to get themselves deeper and deeper involved into government. And it's this is what this problem is when Obama goes out and uses these phrases. And he puts faith-based in the name of these programs.
But, Rama, let's distinguish
the whole nature of it.
Let's distinguish between what's fair and what's unfair. All right, to use another religious phrase, what's kosher and what's unkosher? It's perfectly fair and justified, and I think actually required in the Constitution, for religious people to petition their government for redress of grievances, for churches to there is a difference with the nonprofit part. I mean, they're not paying taxes, so there are some limits on pure political advocacy. But certainly groups of people, let's say outside religious institutions who are getting a tax exemption, certainly can join together and petition the government to do this, that, or the other, just like, you know, the Pope can have an audience with the president, and so can, other religious leaders. I mean, when you talk about influence, the problem really is, I think, improper influence. When you have, for example, under Bush's faith-based initiative, one of the most awful things that they did is they would reward churches that agreed with George Bush's policies. Now, that's something that clearly, it seems to me, is unconstitutional and the kind of thing that should have been struck down in the courts. That's going way, way too far. That's very dangerous. But as we've talked about, for 50 years, Catholic Charities, United Methodist, Jewish Federation, have taken the money and I don't think there's been any record of abuse by any of those three mainstream organizations. So this can be done. You have to be careful. You have to be careful that the camel's nose stays in the nose and doesn't get to cloven hoof. But at the same time, I don't want to be seen as anti-religion because I'm not, and I think most liberals aren't anti-religion. We just think there's separation.
Let me put the anti-religion bit to rest. My daughter went to a fundamentalist Baptist church for the first 3 years of her education. Okay, I am not anti-religion. I am not afraid of religion. I am not I'm not a religious person, certainly by any definition I'm aware of. However, I mean, as far as being afraid of it or opposed to it in any form or shape, I am not. I donated money to the local church when they needed help to try to put their organ back together. Okay, so
see how liberals have been portrayed as anti-religion by people like Karl Rove, and it seems to me that where we can work with religion in ways that don't hurt our fundamental principles, why the heck not? If we can join with a fundamentalist on an environmental thing, terrific. Let's go clean the oceans together. I don't care whether, you know, even if they hate gay people and I'm gay, so what? We can clean the oceans together and just not talk about it. I mean, there are ways we can combine with even people we are fundamentally opposed to in other ways to do some good things, right?
That's right. However, but when you go out and you say, let's just go clean the ocean and not talk about your religion, what Obama is doing is starting to talk about people's religion in these programs. And, I mean, just the very name. Rhetoric counts for a lot. Now, you worked around Washington, D.C.,
And, right. Rhetoric is important. I'll agree. I'll grant that.
No, it is extremely important for people to realize. Rhetoric changes for one of two reasons, and one of two reasons only. Well, I give three. One, the third reason being because some people don't realize what they're saying is actually different. But primarily, people with controlled messages, the rhetoric will change for two reasons. One, they're trying to change the facts, or two, the facts have changed. One or the other is true. And Obama went from, presenting himself as a religious individual, which didn't bother me, who attended a church, who felt he was I guess he considered himself a born-again Christian, as far as I could understand. And, that didn't bother me at all. But he didn't go around talking about the religion and how he had to put faith-based into any of the programs. But it was, we were in this together. Black, white, young, old, left, right, up, down, it didn't matter. We were all in this together.
But I don't think he's discriminating against the non-religious, Rama. He's talking about government. That's why you pointed out that every time Obama talks about this, and it's not true every time Bush talked about it, but every time Obama mentions faith-based organizations, in the same breath, he mentions neighborhood secular organizations, and we'll get the term right, which you and I both don't have exact. But he always mentions both religious and non-religious in the same breath. I don't see him as discriminating against atheists.
No, we're not supposed to be giving money to organized religion. That is one of the basic tenets of this country, and it's one of the reasons why people are so free to practice their religion in this country. It is also, my dogs are about to explode here.
Okay.
It is also one of the reasons that our government has managed to stay out of theocracy so well.
I see it like this. Clearly no government money should go to teach religion. That's why I don't support government aid to religious schools. Clearly no government money should go to proselytize people, to convert people. Obviously that was one of the huge problems with the original draft of the faith-based initiative. I mean, the money can't go to fund a priest or a rabbi or a minister. That's clear. But when the government money is solely going to feeding the poor and, helping drug addicts and clothing the naked and so forth, it doesn't bother me that people are doing it out of religious reasons. I just think we have to find the right accommodation.
You're talking right past me, because I don't care about that either. The fact where
that's
somebody
what faith-based initiative is,
where people get the desire to do good deeds, is fine.
Right, but isn't that what the faith-based initiative is? It doesn't give the money directly to a church.
You're talking just the wording you're using, faith-based initiative.
Well, the wording comes from Karl Rove. I'll grant you that.
Well, but it's there, and it's not only wording that you've picked up. It's wording that also Barack Obama has picked up.
That's right.
And
I
do not see in any way, and this is what I started off with, I do not see how, if Barack Obama cannot break these old habits, why I should believe for a second that he's going to get into Washington, D.C., into the White House, and he's going to break the old Washington, D.C. habits.
I see what you're saying, Rama. I guess, look, I look at it like this. Yes, people use language in very powerful ways. Rhetoric changes people. There's a reason why those that think a woman should be able to have an abortion if she chooses call themselves pro-choice and not pro-abortion. There is a reason why people who are against a woman choosing to have an abortion and want to throw her in jail, whether if she does, they don't say jail abortionist, they say pro-life. There's a reason why Karl Rove used the term faith-based. You're absolutely right about that. I mean, even the term weapons of mass destruction is a terrible term, and I admit to having used it, but it's a ridiculous term. There's only one weapon of mass destruction. It's called a nuclear weapon, and yes, it is a weapon of massive destruction. Biological and chemical weapons do less damage than conventional. See how it sounds? Conventional. It's just explosives. It can kill tens of thousands of people, but it's just explosives. And yet, Bush or Rove cleverly mixed chemical and biological with nuclear because they knew that Saddam Hussein didn't have nuclear power, and so they said, well, he's got chemical weapons. Not recognizing the fact that, let's face it, countries have had chemical weapons since World War I when they used mustard gas. I would say every nation on Earth has that kind of minimal chemical weapons. You're absolutely right about the language. There's no question about it. Faith-based. But here's what I see Obama doing. He's taking the language. This brings me back to my point about Aikido or using someone's power against him. Do you know where the phrase "No Child Left Behind" came from? I believe it came from Marion Wright Edelman, a wonderful liberal woman who cares about every single poor child in America. And George Bush used that wonderful phrase, or Karl Rove, or whomever, used that wonderful phrase and turned it into a conservative government program. To me, what Obama is doing is taking Karl Rove's phrase and turning it against itself, taking Karl Rove's phrase and leading it to be a government program that actually does help poor people. So, yes, we're using his bad words, but I think we're giving them new meaning.
Well, this is where we part ways. I don't believe
Obama
is giving it new meaning. I think he is using it in the same context that Bush used it. In other words, to make use of the organized. As a matter of fact, if you listen to Obama and what I was going to say, he's using it to push the issue that we should be using organized religion to help with our social programs. And Obama has said that straight out. As a matter of fact, he's even talked about using the big churches to teach the little churches how to work through the bureaucracy.
But that doesn't bother me. I guess it just doesn't bother me. As long as we continue to give government aid to non-churches, as long as the government continues to provide through Medicaid. I mean, I guess what you're saying is this can harm...
Mark,
typical government programs, and that's true.
If you look through the Constitution of the United States, you won't find a single amendment talking about the separation of non-church and state. You won't. You will, however, find mention of government not supporting or not
establishing state. A religion.
Right. And so I think we start talking about two very different classes of things here. Because of that, and I do think it's important. And let's remember, the Constitution is still, ostensibly, what defines our government. And I understand, Mark, by the way, you don't have a problem with this. And I do understand this is the crux of our disagreement here. I do, and this is one of the things that bothers me about Obama, is the fact that I think he walked away from saying, I will use my religion and my spirituality in my life, but I will not inflict my religion upon other people if they don't care.
Rama, I've got to close this down just because my time's running out. But I'll tell you, I really appreciate your call, and I hope you'll call in again sometime. I've really enjoyed this discussion. Thanks very much for calling in.
Bye.
Appreciate it. I only got a couple minutes left. Let me just say that Rama did make me think about something else. While I don't have a problem with it, I can see how it might crowd out legitimate government programs, and I want to think about that some more. The idea, and so thank you, Rama, for thinking me think about this, the idea that if we support these things, that maybe there'll be less support for Medicaid or social welfare or traditional government programs, which I think some work, some don't. In my view, whatever works, whether it's Head Start, which has nothing to do with religion, or whether it's a, you know, Catholic Charities drug addiction program. In my view, as long as you don't discriminate in who you serve and who you hire, the best program should succeed, whether they're religious or non-religious. I got 1 minute left. I want to tell you a little bit about Gina Gray. She is my hero of the day. Gina Gray is the public affairs officer at Arlington National Cemetery. She is a national hero. She herself, by the way, served in Iraq, and in fact, she had a convoy that was ambushed and still has some hearing loss from an explosion. What Gina Gray did is she said for the families at Arlington National Cemetery that want the press there, that want the media covering the funerals of the brave men and women that were killed in this stupid war in Iraq, she tried to make sure the press would be there. She was fired for it. Gina Gray, my hero. That's it for the Inside Scoop. Tune in next week. Next up, your hillbilly elitist, Bob Kincaid. This is Mark Levine, signing off.